following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee, Studio A for the moment. In a little while, we're going to head over to Studio C, where I had a fantastic conversation with our guest, Marie-Stéphane Bernard. Ooh, yeah, that's coming up here in just a bit. Before we get into that, though, I wanted to vent my spleen on something here. I don't know about you guys that play around with computers and stuff, but are you tired of Microsoft ramming Windows 10 down everybody's throat? Oh, my Lord, have mercy. Everybody I've talked to that has it said they hate it. Microsoft isn't doing anything to fix it. Every week, there's at least three stories a week that comes out from some tech journal of some sort just bitching about how messed up Windows 10 is, and it really is. And now they're saying that they're just not going to support it anymore because we've moved on. We're forcing everybody onto this thing, and they like to throw the propaganda out there. It's the most downloaded software out there. It's because they're ramming it down everybody's throat. They're forcing you onto it. Windows 7, a little peek here. Windows 7 is the operating system that is used at Radio Memphis, believe it or not, and we keep it updated. It does fine. It does great. It handles everything you throw at it. And the migration to Windows 10, we're going to have to do it because they're not going to support 7 anymore. And Windows 10 is sluggish. It's weird. They're forcing you into these updates. They don't have it figured out. There's a chance you can lose all your stuff. And there's compatibility issues and blah, 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 blah. And those of you that are big Apple fans are sitting there going, uh-huh, told you. Look, you guys aren't in any better shape either because they keep leasing you your software. And that's what Windows is doing, by the way, with Windows 10. They're forcing this whole lease thing on the Office, the 365 thing that they're doing, you know, that you got to pay. They want money from you. You got to pay to use their Office software. Little do anybody realize, and I think especially the people at Microsoft, a lot of people that have Windows software aren't using Office products from Windows. Here at here in Studio A, we're on the Linux systems over here, and I couldn't be happier, really, to be quite frank with you. It does have its limitations, of course. A lot of the Linux people will say, because they love to sell it, you know, and they'll say, well, you know, you can run anything on it, and to a certain extent you can run a bunch of Windows programs on it, but there are compatibility issues with some more sophisticated bits of software, and of which I use from time to time, and there are those issues. So there's really no perfect world for any of this, and we're all sort of stuck in this world of planned obsolescence. I don't know. Your phone is a prime example of that sort of thing. You know, the iPhone, the Apple iPhone, the monster phone that it is. I carry one myself. I haven't upgraded it in a while, and I'm perfectly happy with what I've got. But I'm going to have to at some point because it's just wearing out. You know, they do that. You have to get new equipment. But by God, they go from, you know, $400 or $500 up to $1,500, $2,000 phones now, and it's got to have the latest and greatest. You know, that's how they sell it. And you know, well, you got to have one that folds. Why would I need this? I know I sound like a cranky old man. Why do I need this? I'm fine with what I'm doing now. I just have to have access to the Facebook. That's it. Even that is turned into an arduous task. You know, we've chained ourselves to technology, and we've willingly done that to ourselves, and yet we're bitching about it, and nobody, and I mean nobody, is doing anything about it. And it's just I guess the way it is, and we're just going to have to figure something out along the way, and we just keep putting up with it. And Lord have mercy, if I got to pay $2,000 for a phone, my God, it's almost as if I'd almost want to have a landline and just not have the ability to make phone calls on a handheld device. Almost. There is a weird convenience factor because you know what I'm talking about here. When you've gone and you left the house for the day and you forgot your phone, it's still sitting on your bedside table or whatever, and you're thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get through the day. And a lot of times we'll be late to our jobs if we turn around and go get it, and we'll force ourselves to be late. because we just, you know, you may not get a phone call the entire time, but the day you do leave it at home and say, screw it, I'm going to go phoneless today. I'm going to go against the grain. And then you come home and there's like 50 phone calls from people go, where were you? Tried to get a hold of you all day. We couldn't find you. You know, it's that kind of thing. So I don't know. You know, the one thing I think I'm fairly certain on when it comes to the smart speakers and stuff, I don't know that I'm going to get one. I really don't. I'm just inviting trouble when that happens. I've talked about that in the past, and I'm just going to leave it that way. And what prompted all of this was an email that I got from Apple. As a podcast producer, they wanted to make some changes in the way we set up the technical end of the show. And they sent out two emails, and the first one said that if you use the episode number in your title, they could pull it from the Apple store, the iTunes store. And within, I don't know, 2 days, another email came out and it said, no, we need to clarify. We're not going to pull anything out if you use episodic numbers in your titles. So the backlash was just immediate for people going, what are you doing? And to be fair, if Apple wanted to purge this show from iTunes, I don't know that it would be the end of the world, because this show is available. This is where I'm going to honk my horn here. This show is available everywhere. You know, wherever you get your podcast. You know, we're hosted at Podbean. You can get the Podbean app and get this show and a billion other shows, and you'd be perfectly fine. You know, it's everybody wanting to put their thumbprint on something. Apparently somebody at iTunes in the iTunes store has said, you know, I'm going to make some changes here because this is, you know, I'm the new guy here, and we're going to make these podcasters do what we want them to do. It's a never-ending cycle of madness is what it is. So, you know, those of you that have a tenuous tethered relationship with your internet and your phone and stuff like that, hats off to you if it's tenuous. And those of you that are slaves to it, you know, I feel you. I really do, because it's painful. It can be very painful. Right on, kids. On that, we'll pause. We'll be back here in just a few moments. Very briefly here, I was very fortunate to sit down with a very lovely lady. She is she's a pro, man. I can't tell you how much fun it was to have a conversation with this lady. Marie Stéphane Bernard. She's from France. She lives here in Memphis. Well, she splits her time here from Memphis and in Europe. She is in the opera business, and she's an absolute dream, a lovely lady to talk to. We had a ball. We had an absolute grand old time. You're going to hear this conversation in its entirety, so stick around, kids. It's Marie Stéphane Bernard right here from Radioland.
Hey, CBD users, you need to know about thegreenmancbd.com. We carry leading national brands at great prices, brands like Green Roads, Pharmacist Formulated CBD and Hemp Oils, Diamond CBD, Relax Gummies, Liquid Gold Disposable Vape Kits, and more. You can visit our store in Memphis at the Broom Closet, 546 South Main Street, or order online at thegreenmancbd.com for free shipping in the U.S. on all orders over $50. Enhance your life with CBD and hemp products. Must be 18 years old to purchase CBD products.
My guest this time is a singer in her own right. You probably have perhaps seen her on stage. If not, you're about to in a turn of phrase, if you will. Marie Stéphane Bernard is here. She is known for her operatic work, and she joins us from Radioland. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Eric. Very well. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for coming in. Yeah. Yes, yes. I know we've been working to try and get you down here for a while, and now here you are in our studios. And
very happy to be here.
You're from France.
Yes, Paris.
Paris.
Downtown.
Downtown Paris.
Yes.
I have spent about 10 days in your city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautiful. I absolutely adore Paris.
Yes. You know, it's born and raised there, and each time, every single day for me, it's a miracle to walk in the streets of Paris. I am always discovering something, always the nose up, you know, and to see the beauty of this city.
That typical Parisian thing, nose up, cigarette going, a cup of coffee. Yes.
Yes, the way to live.
It's fantastic. It's been a while since I've been there. One of the places that really stood out to me was Montmartre.
Excellent, because I'm from there.
It's beautiful.
Boulogne-la-Galette, born there. You know, I had all Paris every day on my feet. You open the window and boom, you see all Paris.
Because it's on one of the hills.
Yes, exactly. And it's pretty high.
Yeah, and you can see into the city. And totally. It's, and the artists, the impressionists would sit out there and they would paint. And
yeah, exactly. And the music street, musician the streets, and so many things happen in the history over there. But artistically speaking, it was a high point coming from Montmartre. And then they went down the hill and crossed the Seine and went to Montparnasse, where I am now. I think I follow the flow,
Follow the flow.
The story of my life.
Yeah, you go, because you go back a couple of times a year, several times a year, don't you?
Yes.
Because you live in Memphis, but you also have a home there, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Saint-Germain-des-Prés, yes.
So I'm very fortunate. You're a dual citizen then, right?
I am. Yeah. I am.
Why did you come to Memphis?
Long story short, is the case of life. Let's say like this.
Somebody dragged you here, didn't they?
Who knows? Who knows? And here we are.
And here we
and
are.
Happily here. And, I met so many incredible friends here, wonderful people. Yeah. And I am really blessed to be here also. And I love to embrace Memphian's culture. I love it.
Yeah, because it is, it's certainly a little different, but not too terribly much. I know the cultures are different, but we're an artistic town as same as Paris.
Indeed. Of course, we think right away of Elvis. And I grew up with a mom who loved Elvis. So I grew up, strangely enough, listening to Elvis day and night because mom loved him.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's very funny. So it was meant to be, for real. You know, when we think that life is a circle?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's true.
You know, because you never thought that you would wind up here.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, really, absolutely not,
yeah,
obviously.
Because, from my understanding, too, you of course, were born and raised in Paris or in France. And then,
Paris.
And then you spent some of your educational time in Italy, did you?
Exactly.
Another beautiful country.
I won a scholarship to go to Santa Cecilia in Rome. And so, age 18, bloom, I flew there and I began to learn my opera skills there. Of course, is the really the nation of the opera, Italy. So it meant everything for me to be there and to really embrace this culture and embrace this so particular type, style, repertoire of music.
Oh, sure.
And I began to work right away and to sing, frankly, everywhere.
Oh, well, yeah.
Even when I was still at Santa Cecilia, I worked merely 10 operas a year. I was already...
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, because opera... And I'm not a massive fan of it. I do enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Famously starred in one of my favorite productions, which is Carmen.
Yes.
Georges Bizet.
Yes.
And it's a fun story.
Yes.
It really is. When you get through it. But those types of productions are not easy.
No.
People don't think of it as being it's like, it's just a show. Well,
mm-mm. It's huge. First, because you have
they're 4 hours long.
True. We are athletes, because you have to be on stage and to sing and to act and to dance.
The costume changes, the moving about and
the concentration. Because when you have the lead role, as I have, you have the responsibility of really the level of the performance every single moment.
There's 30 pieces of music in there, isn't there, or more?
Oh, it's more than this. If you are speaking about Carmen, especially, the character of Carmen, she arrives really at the third scenes, and she's always there.
She's in every scene.
Quite. Just two or three others with two or three scenes without her, but she's always there. Yeah.
It gives you a chance to go have a glass of water.
You manage this also even in stage. You have a wonderful colleague who pass you on the back of the stage. You don't see it, but you...
Yeah, because of there's diversion. Somebody else is delivering a line from across the stage. True. And it gives you a chance to,
Yeah. We manage that.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I know I'm so used to rock and roll shows and, of course, some of the American-style Broadway musicals and things like that. And they're short, they're compact, they get to the point, you're in and you're out. Yeah. But opera, that's an investment.
It is. But, first of all, it's a passion. If you don't have the passion really in the core of your body, you don't stay there.
No.
It's too it's too much. Too much everything. Really. It's too extreme. You express extreme characters, extreme sensation, extreme feelings, extremes everything.
Yeah.
It is very challenging for yourself as a performer. It's very challenging also extreme for the audience, because in the arc of the opera, they are listening.
The audience
they
is
are
getting
going
tired
through
too.
So many things, you know.
You're on your way home. What did I just see?
Exactly.
I'm exhausted.
Exactly.
But you guys, you must leave the stage at the end of a show just tired.
Yes.
Just beat tired.
Bit tired. But what a pleasure and what a blessing, to be able to present and to share this knowledge and this culture to the audience. It's each single evening for me is a blessing. Really a treat.
You come off the stage, have a glass of wine and a sandwich, and you're ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To leave and to have fun with your friends.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The pressure's off a little bit.
Exactly.
And
it's important.
And you do it the next night.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, in the rhythm of the opera, usually it's every two nights.
Yeah, every other night.
Other night, excuse me.
Yeah,
so,
nice.
Because it's a lot. It's very rare that we sing every night.
Yeah.
Also because we are there for 1 month. I'm speaking in Europe. Here, rhythm is a little bit different, shorter.
A lot different.
Yeah. But for us, it can be... It happened that I was in some production in Paris Opera that I had to sing quite every night for 3 or 4 months every winter. But this was exceptional. This was really an incredible adventure, by the way. Very interesting to do as a performer, because you never know how you will be able to do it. And everything went well.
You mentioned it's athletic. It's
very.
There's a lot of physical work, and it's not just in the movement on stage, but the singing is really the most athletic part of it.
Exactly.
Now with today's, do you wear a mic? Do they have the hidden mics on you, or are you just singing to the back of the room?
It depends where. Usually without mics. It happens that, for example, in some operas now, because they are very large, they put some mic on the stage,
seen those, yeah.
Very
they're
random,
at the feet.
But we don't have personal mics. It's it takes the sound of all the stage, let's say like this. And it happened that I had some mics for some operettas, but because technically it required that. It's not my favorite things to have, frankly.
The mics, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Well,
No.
You're more classically trained.
Yes, but totally.
Yeah.
Totally. So I...
You're used to singing from the bottom of your shoes at this point, yeah.
We can say that.
You can reach down there and pull it out, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, bring it on, baby.
See, the Memphis is wearing off on you already.
Yes.
And a lot of people, and I know a little bit about this, but the world of opera itself is it's a very different world for show business types, for entertainers.
Yes,
there's a lot of strange, funny things that goes on around these productions. And I don't want to get into it too deep unless you want to talk about it. But people don't necessarily realize about how much of a family is built around the production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody knows everybody, it seems, for the most part. And then you're dealing with the orchestra and the conductors and all that stuff that's going on. And then there's people yelling at each other and people are having fun with each other. I know that there had to have been some times where you sat there and went, what did I get myself into? Well, who are these people? They're animals. They're crazy. Because opera singers do have a reputation for being a bit wild.
Perhaps we have to.
Well spoken. Well said.
You know, yeah. After all, when you are surrounded with a high profile characters, I may say.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to be surrounded by this kind of people. Frankly, you know, we are. It's so challenging that we are. Each of us, we are very focused on.
You're doing a job, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. On our role of what we have to do on stage, musically, da da da. So it's a work in progress,
yeah.
And at the moment of the rehearsal, is where obviously all the show is built and it's in. Building process.
Yeah.
So it's very strong moments. Also with, it can be with the conductor, the director, or some colleagues. But more than everything, we try. I have to say, in my experience, we all try to make this happen.
Yeah.
And you know, in our days, it's chop chop chop. Time is money.
Sure.
And we don't have a lot of time. To build each shows. So
well, it's a business.
It is. It is.
First and foremost, it is a business.
Of course.
And the art is up there, but
yeah. And what is very interesting is what's happening between the rehearsal process,
yeah,
and then during the shows, because there are two different realities there. Because mm-hmm. during rehearsals process, we are learning what the director wants, what the conductor wants, and okay. But during the performance after, we are alone on stage. Okay, it's on us. So we begin to feel our space,
yes.
And our, you know, relation with the colleagues. And
your personalities begin to come through.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I always love to see the difference between what happened during 1 month of the rehearsals and what happens
and
really.
What happens on stage, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a bit different, yes.
Yeah, it can be. It
well,
can be.
And every and you've probably played the... How many times have you played Carmen? How many...
55
times.
Yeah.
And every one of them have been different, I'm sure.
Of course. Absolutely. And depend also of your colleagues, because your colleagues changed also sometimes, obviously.
Sure.
And yourself, you change. You want to express one day more this and the other day more that, how you feel during
your
the day.
Your emotions mature a bit.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And this is also a privilege when you are able to do many times the role. And I like to dig more, you know, in the character, in the psychology of the character, and to read everything about it, to prepare myself.
Well, you must know Carmen better than Bizet himself, if you've played her that many times.
No, but Bizet had to really think. But I may say it's, I have a pretty good idea of what I want to express.
I would say so. She's not just the cigarette girl that you would think. You
absolutely
know.
Not.
No, there's a lot going on with
her. Yeah, yeah. She's first and foremost a woman on stage.
Absolutely she is.
And it's all about that. Speaking of Carmen, it's really about, the woman. The one.
The one.
Yep.
Well, and on that, I've talked to, you know, our rock and roll people and our blues artists that go from here to there to play.
Yeah.
And they will, one of the first things they'll tell you is that audiences in the United States are vastly different than the audiences in Europe.
True. It's very true.
And it's almost off-putting for an American to play in their own mind because no one is used to them being respectful in the audience.
Ah, nice.
And
that's
they
funny.
Feel they sit there and they go, they're not moving, they're not dancing, they're not having fun.
They're very attentive.
Along. They're attentive.
Yes.
And at the end of the number, there's a bit of a pause and it's mm-hmm. just this polite applause. Whereas here there's people throwing beer bottles, I got the shirt waved over their head. You know, Americans are being Americans. But if they're not used to that, and I know that had to have been an adjustment for you. I know operatic audiences are still gonna be relatively the same, right?
Mais non. It's a matter of fact, I can share with you that American audience is wonderful. Wonderful.
You're just not kissing ass here, are you now?
Okay, I can tell you. No, absolutely not. No. It's not my, you know me. It's not my style at all. No, I can show you one thing. For example, I sang at Kennedy Center.
Yes.
Okay. Washington Opera, La Vie Parisienne, The Parisian Life by Offenbach. Okay,
yes.
I had one of the lead roles called Metella. Metella is a courtesan. She arrives, beautiful direction by Jérôme Savary,
yeah,
with whom I worked so much. And so the character arrives on stage, and she, voilà. And first she doesn't say anything and then she sings, okay? I arrived and there is a funny situation, mais bon, I did it 200 times, so it's all right. I arrived, ta-ta-ta, boom. And for the first time ever, all the audience were laughing like death. I said, what's up? And I was super surprised. And I looked my colleagues on stage, what's happening?
Why are they laughing?
What's happening here? It's only the fact that the subtitles were explaining exactly the situation,
yeah,
which is true. It was a funny situation, may not at the point to be so laughable. It's why I'm telling you, it's incredible the reaction and the American public is so receptive. It's fantastic. And there, yes, it was my first time ever, and say, oh, I love them. And yes,
yeah,
go, baby, go.
It's addicting when that happens.
Totally. Oh, totally.
Because there's a connection, you know.
Oh, yeah.
An immediate connection. And a lot of artists, they feed off of, the American artists specifically, feed off of that connection,
yes,
that they get.
Yeah, yeah. And bon, and to have the privilege to make love an audience is incredible.
Oh my, what? I need to go to these shows.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Fantastic.
Do you make eye contact with the audience when you're performing?
Alors, it's not possible because it's too far away from us, because you have to
I know
to
the stage is deep. Yeah.
Yes. And we have the first for the orchestra.
Yes.
So we have the stage, the orchestra, and then the first rows.
So you can barely see them.
No. Yeah.
Not, with the lights and all. You
exactly.
Probably can't
you
even
have
see
the
anybody.
Lights
yeah.
And all. You, yeah. You see sometimes, two times, it depends on the lights and where you are on stage. And,
well, but, I know they're looking
then,
at you. Yes,
and yeah. Again, you are so focused that, frankly, you are really into what you have to do and to express as best as possible, to sing as best as possible,
yeah,
and to be in the action and to act and to dance. And to what you feel, though, is the energy.
Yeah.
And this is fascinating. Yeah. Because it's dark in front of you, from the stage, I mean, but you feel each evening, you feel a very specific energy. It's not about how they respond, and it's different, even
it's a
different.
Presence, right?
It is a presence. It is, and this is magic. I love that.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah, that's a, I've never heard an artist put it that way, but that's, I know.
Here we go.
I know what you mean.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is fantastic. And I can even tell you sometimes that I feel second row, second gallery, there is a sadness.
Really?
Yeah.
There's...
And sometimes I turn and I go and I sing in this direction on purpose.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of empathetic in that aspect.
Yeah, I don't know. I really do.
It's
really
almost like a psychic thing you got going on. You're reading people's minds from the...
No.
I kid.
Just, you know, it's really... You feel the energy. You
yeah.
feel. And it's... yeah. And it's part of our job also. It's to
until
give something...
some dumbass leaves his phone on and it begins to ring in the middle of the show.
Lord, this is another problem here.
Yes, it
yes.
is. Because yeah. people can't be separated from their phones.
This is really very unrespectful, I mean.
It is. It's horribly... It's disrespectful.
It is, really. And this is sad, because if people in the audience cannot think by himself that... You cannot do that.
Did it's you see not long ago, during a recent production of Hamilton, it happened?
Mm. And, no, I didn't.
And the guy who's playing the lead, I can't think.
He stopped.
He.
I saw it doing, not this one.
He ad-libbed a line.
Yeah, of course.
And
included.
And it had a little rhyme, too, because it was a rhyming line. And he said, please don't let me please don't let me rewrite this line again or something to that effect. Sure. Turn your phone off or leave the room. But it made a clever line. And then he took to Twitter and he mentioned it.
Good for him. I understand that. And, because and it's true. It's a
right.
problem.
It's rude.
Yes, it is rude. Really. Obviously.
Turn your thing off, put it in your pocket and forget it.
Why are you here? Why are you in the at the theater if it's to be always with this link with your telephone for 1-2 hours, the time of the performance? Come on.
Well, and the beauty, the idea of going to the theater
exactly
is to escape all this other crap that's going on in everybody's world.
Beats me.
I want to watch what's going on up there.
Exactly.
And by the way, thank God for the subtitles.
Yeah.
That has changed everything.
It's wonderful. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And
it makes a big difference.
Yes, it does.
And it doesn't take away from, you don't feel like you're reading the show. You're able to quickly see what's going on.
Exactly.
And if you listen, no matter what the language is, you get a good idea of what's going on.
I love to hear that. Absolutely. It should be like that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The music is just tremendous. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
When you were in Italy, when you were studying over there, clearly you had to learn the Italian language.
Oh, okay. I have a good one for that also.
Okay.
So,
yes.
I study English and German as a kid. Yeah. So I arrived in Italy. So I earned the scholarship. I arrived for really. It was like this. I arrived in Fiumicino Airport in Rome.
Yeah.
In the middle of the crowd, for real, I stopped, and it was a chaos. I stopped, I let my luggage, and I thought, wow, I don't know how to say yes and no in this country.
Uh-oh.
In 2 weeks, I have to do this contest to win, to get my...
Your validation.
Yes,
your
validation of... Yes.
For being there, yes.
Yes, for being there. And I have to sustain whatever they will ask me in Italian. So chop chop, I have to really work on it.
Yeah.
And I did it.
Yeah.
No, I learned there. Really, I learned
Well, that's
there.
The best way to learn. It's just immerse yourself in the culture.
Yeah.
It. Yeah.
But when you have a deadline and you have to give really exams... This was, I didn't sleep a lot.
I would imagine. No, you're probably pretty tired a good chunk of the time.
Yeah, but it was so
because you're also, you're singing in Italian.
Yeah.
And it helps to understand what it is that you're, what the story is about, the libretto, if you will.
Of
course. You have to know that.
Yes. Yes. But you know, I sang
in... But it's not just phonetics. You got to understand what it is.
Yes. But you work on it. I sang in Russia, in Czech, in Chinese when I...
Yeah, but you don't speak Chinese, do you?
No, I don't. But of course, I had to know a little bit when I was in China to handle them.
Well, if you had to talk to the audience for a minute.
Exactly. Yeah. Japanese and on and on. You have to, yeah.
You just pick it up.
Yes, exactly. Which is fun. Which is fun.
Oh,
which
I'm
is
sure.
Fun. But you're right. For each role, you have obviously to know exactly what you are saying when you are singing.
Yeah.
So it's crucial. So you work on yeah. phonetic, or you work and you write down under each your on the score under each words exactly what does it mean?
What would you say is the most difficult performance you've ever had?
Performance
or show? I mean, not just individual show, but you know, was there a particular opera that you have found to be more difficult than others, or are they all the same?
No, they are not all the same. But very difficult, perhaps for the language, it was Rusalka in Czech.
Oh,
by,
yeah.
By Dvorak. Beautiful music, but it was difficult to really learn. This was pretty, yeah, pretty rough.
Yeah.
But beautiful. Yeah. When you get the language and the music, each language has its own music.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah, there's a rhythm to it for sure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So when you immerse yourself in it and when you get it, as I say, after it goes with the flow. But you have to get... But the thing is, because we have to memorize all this, after it's not a matter to say it once.
There's no teleprompter on the foot of the stage.
No way.
You know?
So this, perhaps, Czech language was a little bit harder than the others to go into, for me.
Sure.
For me. But very interesting and beautiful music. No complaint there, but perhaps a little bit difficult. Yeah.
I'd say so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The mental gymnastics alone has got to be exhausting.
Yeah, and sometimes, speaking of some difficulties, if we want, yeah. depend also of the direction.
Yeah,
you have some director who are asking you, different strange things to do. I was so far so blessed that I didn't had so many crazy things to do. But for example, speaking of this Rusalka, I had to sing a lot in a pool. That's when it was. Giving the illusion of a lake because the story is in the lake. I was literally in the water.
You were literally in water.
Yeah, in the water till the knee, if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
So technically speaking, you have to make sure with the technician that they warm up the water enough. No, you know, it doesn't...
it's going to get cold.
Yeah. See, no, you don't sing 2 days later. So yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know? So, voilà, these kind of things. This was technically a little bit tricky, but... You do it.
You go through it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, it can be fun, but it requires a little bit of preparation. Ah, and I have another thing.
Yes.
Now, this was fun.
Yes.
In Péricole by Offenbach at Paris Opera. So I was singing Péricole, the lead role, and Jérôme Savary, always the same director, fantastic. Yeah. He asked me during one rehearsal, deal. Are you able to jump, you know, from the edge of the stage down where the orchestra is?
Down into the pit?
Yes.
That's a pretty good drop in a lot of stages.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And I look at there, I look at him, I say, let's go. If you give me two or three sessions with a fireman and a stuntman,
stuntman,
who will...
catch you?
No, teach me how to because
oh, teach you how to do it.
How to do it because it's very, very and to have enough mattress,
something to some padding, yes.
And fireman would be there, of course, for safety
sure.
every single evening. And good, let's try. And I was my character was at this moment in a wedding dress with a huge. This was a big other, and each single evening I jumped there. But technically speaking, that's mean I had to be there very early in the afternoon to rehearse every single time my
that's
jump.
That's a big moment in the show.
Yes. But physically, because I'm singing, it requires a lot of physical preparation.
Well, sure.
But it was fun. I love to do that.
Not only are you singing and
huge moving, hit. Everybody was thinking
the
that.
Crowd went nuts.
Yeah, yeah. I will show you the photo. It by the way, it's on my website, so you can
okay,
see. It. Yeah, you go on Péricole and you see it and you can see.
I'll look for that. Because not only are you singing, you're wearing these wild costumes.
True, also.
And you're having to hit marks on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
It is hugely demanding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But this, you memorize the direction during the rehearsals.
Yeah, because you go through a lot of rehearsals.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where it almost becomes a little more natural for you.
It has to. You have to be, yeah, yeah. Like,
you don't want a show to just go off the rails.
No, absolutely not. No, no, it's the contrary.
has it ever happened? Has there been moments on stage? Because not every performance is perfect. I know that.
No, of course not.
There's going to be little issues here and there. For the most part, the audience doesn't get it any. You know? But has there ever been anything that has just happened where it's like, oh my God, I just want to go home?
Hopefully not. But I can think about one... One thing happened. It was in Shanghai Opera. It was brand new. We were the first company invited to for the opening. When I was singing, one part of the setting fell.
Oh no!
Yeah. So, and my luck was I was really in front. It happened like that. I was in front of the on stage.
Yeah.
And what happened? It was very on the back on from the stage. So nothing dramatic happened.
Nobody got hurt.
No. But of course, it was there was a noise.
Oh, I would imagine.
And I was,
it was
in the middle of my area.
Yeah.
And I looked literally on the eyes. On the from the conductor because the conductor saw everything.
Because he's looking up there. Yeah.
And I was continuing to sing, and and from through the eyes, you know,
eyes got that
and the gaze, yeah. I understood that, okay, continue, don't worry, let's go. Boom.
He's still waving his arms, you're still singing,
exactly.
And that's what we're going to keep doing.
Exactly. And we save the production on the evening like that. But this is extremely rare.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is kind of the nightmare we can have, obviously.
Yeah.
One part of the set
That's a far worse nightmare than going out on stage and having your costume come apart. I mean, I know that
happens. You can manage that. Whatever.
You just keep going.
Let's go. But part of the set,
it's now a production of hair.
Well, let's update.
Let's update. Equus, perhaps.
Exactly.
I guess it's a joke. It's kind of a running stereotype, I think, amongst people who work in opera, that the whole diva thing.
Mm.
You are not a diva. I've met you several times, and you enjoy your work. Mm. I know there's some out there. I've heard stories about Pavarotti.
Yeah,
I heard he was a bit of a diva.
Yeah,
you know, probably. I guess in some instances, maybe rightfully so. You sort of expect it. But there again, there's really no room for any of that business. I mean,
no, but I think it's a little update all that, and perhaps it's part of a character. Perhaps it's part of
who they are in public as opposed to their at home.
Yeah, speaking of Pavarotti, because I met him so many times,
yeah.
I can just share that it was his way to appear and to protect himself.
And that makes perfect sense.
Because obviously when he was the star of the star for so many years, yeah. as a best tenor in the world, in his category, no yeah. question. So that's mean a way to live,
right.
and a way to live in public, you know. So
it was sort of expected from these guys.
Yes.
Yeah. But nowadays, not so much. I know that's the stereotype is what it is.
Yes, you know, exactly.
You know.
Exactly. But I'm not that.
No, so you are not that at all.
Absolutely
not.
No.
But you're not just some singing girl either, you know.
No.
Because I have seen some of your videos. Mm-hmm. They're on YouTube.
Yeah.
I've seen some of your performances. And you work, boy. You sing from, like I said, bottom of the shoes, man,
yeah.
all the way out.
I love the stage. The stage is really my home. I am, so-called the animal on stage, you know?
Is that what they call it? They give you that nickname, the animal?
Yes, I am an animal on stage.
So they go, look out, here comes the animal.
Yeah, boom.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
But I make sure, saying that everybody on stage, all my colleagues, are feeling as best as possible and as well as possible in their capacities, always.
Right,
I'm really...
you seem very generous on stage.
Very much so. I love to be... But,
I can...
You know,
I've been in show business long enough that I can see that happen. And it looks like you're having an enjoyable time on stage.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, it depends of the role. There are some roles more dramatic, which requires more...
Emotion, of
yes,
course.
Yes, exactly.
But through that, you're in your element. You're having a good time.
Exactly. Again, I'm happy on stage.
Yeah.
And I am profoundly happy in what I am doing.
Well, sure.
So it's what it counts. And I think, obviously, who is... there and listening and watching what's happening on stage, feel it.
Yeah.
You know, the audience sees everything, what's happening on stage, everything, and feels and listen, but sees also everything.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a very particular mechanisms, you know, this relationship between audience and stage.
Well, you got it down. They don't teach that in school, do they?
No.
They don't. That's the one thing they don't teach.
Of course not.
You got to figure that out on your own.
Yeah. It's why I am always saying to so many of new singers who approach me and asking me so many tips and advices, which I'm very happy to share. But one of them is you will learn and you learn your craft and your art on stage. If you are done for that, on stage. Not everybody is done for that. You can have a voice. You can be very musical, you can be a wonderful artist, may not be good for the stage. The stage is very particular. You can be good for the concert. There is nothing wrong with that. But and concert, with orchestra,
yeah,
with chamber music, it's very specific.
Yes.
And it's wonderful. Not everybody is good for everything.
Well, sure.
Know? And these things, you know, it's not very clear at the beginning for this young artist.
But they find their way.
Hopefully.
Usually.
Yes.
You did.
Of course.
Clearly.
But I, you know, I was very lucky. I had the chance to sing with so many incredible artists in Europe. So I learned my job with best, really with the best. And I was very fortunate. Very fortunate.
There's a link to your website that is in the description of this show. So when people could go back and read that, they can click on your on that link and see you in action. And
yes.
And I know you've. Are you, when are you going back to Europe? Or do you know yet?
No, I just came back, so It will be very soon, but I don't know when exactly. For now, I have to work here.
Yes. Well, yeah, I know you're working here in the state.
I have so many things here to do. Let me a little time here.
You're a busy girl. That's certainly where that is. Are you aside from just your website, where else can people find you?
The website is the best, or on Facebook.
Yeah, you're on Facebook.
With Marie-Stéphane Bernard. And they find me.
They find you.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what they should.
Yeah.
We're going to pause. We're going to come back and we're going to play a little game.
Okay.
It's a fun little game. You can't lose. It's called Playing Favorites. And I'll explain that.
Okay.
And we'll have a good time. So
let's hope.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Reverend Oma from the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop. The Broom Closet is your one-stop shop for all of your metaphysical needs, such as candles, gemstones, herbs, gifts, and more. We now also stock CBD oil, vape kits, lotion, and edibles. The Broom Closet is also hosts to monthly workshops, rituals, and drum circles for those interested in conscious living. The Broom Closet is the only place to get your cards read by me, Reverend Oma, or one of our other amazing readers. Discover the Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop in historic downtown Memphis or online at thebroomclosetmemphis.com. The Broom Closet, let us help you light your path.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
And thanks to the magic of the internet joining us here from Radioland, from their studios, Langston Studios. It's Sarah Simmons Langston and her lovely husband, Greg. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey.
Hey, Rick. It's going awesome, man.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on this program. We've been wanting to have you on here for a while, and I know schedules and life and all that kind of gets in the way, and it makes for a mess. But we finally got it put together, and here you guys are.
Glad to be here.
Sarah, of course, those of you who have listened to Radio Memphis, she's a friend of the station. She has shown up over there several times. You brought me artists. You've brought me, like, I think, two or three, I think, now, right?
I think, yep, three artists.
And they're all tremendous talent. I don't know. Where are you finding these? Where are you finding these people?
So, basically, it's crazy because we haven't even done that much marketing.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
All right, kids, you've heard what's coming up next time on the program. We're still sitting here with Marie-Stéphane Bernard, not a diva.
Okay, this is done.
No,
checked,
not a diva.
Great, I love that.
Very talented opera singer, yes.
Checked,
that's
I love
check
that.
All. And we got a chance to talk about the opera and all that fun stuff. I know you're working on a project. You got a new project that's in the works. And what is this? What is this?
Yeah, it's
doing?
A very exciting project. For the first time, I am creating a new show.
You're writing it.
It's already wrote with Jerry Dye, incredible writer.
Yeah.
So the show is called Sounds of a Life.
Sounds of Life.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's based on my life. So from Montmartre to Memphis.
Well, this will be fun.
Yes. And is my also my wish to present a different way of singing between and music between French chanson, opera, operetta, and finishing with a little treat of Memphis, let's say like that.
Aha! I think I know where you're going, because I understand Memphis music more than a lot of people.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Here we go.
Yes,
I love that. Yeah. So
we can help you out with that if necessary.
So, I love that. Yeah, let's speak about it. And so it's very challenging, musically speaking.
So is it a musical?
It will be a one-woman show.
A one-woman show. With orchestra and a band?
With... Hello. For now, it's with music, with a piano, piano and myself. And as soon as it will requires more musicians, we will put more musicians.
Let it grow.
Let it grow. Exactly. So I will begin with Opera Memphis when it will be ready.
Yes.
And so I am at the moment of, because I am producing it, so step by step, you know, it's growing. And
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but it's very exciting, very exciting. And when it will be ready, I will beginning to do it here during with Opera Memphis.
You don't have a date for that, do you?
No. Not now, but hopefully soon.
Well, when you do have that date, let me know.
Yes,
and
I will.
And we'll bring you down here again. We'll put you on the radio.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
And we'll talk about it live.
Okay.
And that way we can see if we can get people to come out and get tickets and go see the show.
Absolutely.
I want to see it already.
Wonderful. I will love that.
I want to sit in the front row where you can't see me.
I love that. I love that.
Well, that's fantastic. I mentioned before we paused, there's a little game we call playing favorites. See,
okay.
I have been accused in the past of being somebody who plays favorites as an artist, which is not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave me the idea to ask somebody like yourself, since you're sitting here, a few of your favorite things.
Okay.
You know, like, for example, of all the places that you may have been or have not gone to yet, what would you say is your favorite city in the world?
Paris.
Paris.
Can I say that?
Which is what you can say whatever you want. Which is why you're living in Memphis now.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, my wife is not from here. She's from outside of Dublin, and she goes back a couple of times a year.
Of course,
you know,
I understand that.
That's the dual citizen.
It's how it works.
It works because they kick her out of the house for a couple of weeks. It's a big deal. What would you say is your favorite food?
Okay. French food.
Of course, it is.
And Italian food. No, frankly,
Italian,
both.
Those, oh, yeah.
Both. For different reason, but I cannot.
Most French food is it's flavorful and kind of rich. You don't eat so much of it.
Yeah, but you know, now you have new chefs in France who are really working on under this aspect that you have really all the wonderful taste and all wonderful flavors, and it's pretty light.
Last time I was in Europe, I walked by a cafe, and they had, it was like almost like a fast food type of thing, and they had up on the menu, on the wall, they had small, medium, large, and American.
Cool.
So they know
now
what's
you
fat
get it.
People. Yeah, I totally get it.
I love that.
Of the shows, the operas, what's your favorite one?
Operas?
Yeah, what's your favorite opera?
It's Carmen.
Carmen, yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah.
Really.
Are you comfortable sitting in the audience watching somebody else perform Carmen?
Oh, yeah. I did 2 weeks ago.
Oh, so, there you go.
Oh, absolutely. And I love to go to listen to new artists, new shows, colleagues. I love that.
So,
I love live shows.
Well, that's good.
You
know,
I love it.
We got a bunch of them here in town, you know.
Yes,
they're not quite the ones that you're used to, but you know.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to drag you down here for a Sunday night blues show sometime. It'll be big.
We'll do.
Yeah, because you know, hey, blues may turn out to be your favorite type of music.
Who knows?
You know? I guess it's safe to say that your favorite onstage costume would probably be Carmen's, wouldn't it be?
Costume?
Yeah, your costume.
No. Frankly,
no.
That I wear?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it was a production in La Fenice, Venice, and I sang Musetta.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah.
I can tell you that I wore a black fur and black hat in, you know, it was mink and fox.
Is this the thing you're wearing when you come off the helicopter?
And this was Christian Dior. This was in Paris Opera.
Uh-huh.
This was incredible too as well. I mean, Venice, it was unbelievably beautiful. unbelievably beautiful.
Because those costumes are elaborate and they're heavy.
Of course, it's one of my, but it's one of my requests. When I sign, I say, I want to see right away the stylist, and we begin to work on it.
So
it's very important.
So you actually have that control. You can sit down with a costumer and say, I'm not wearing this, I'm wearing that.
Yes. Yeah. Of course.
Well, I want your job.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody wants your job. Yeah. And finally, what's your favorite thing to do on a Saturday night?
I'll be with friends.
Yeah?
Have a wonderful dinner, a wonderful company, be with friends, to see a show.
Yeah, you don't strike me as the bathrobe, six-pack of beer and a pizza and Netflix kind of girl.
No, absolutely not. No. I am more to see a show and to be with friends, good restaurant, good dinner, good drinks, yeah.
Fantastic.
And to share, social, yeah, to be with people.
You're awesome.
You too.
Thank you so very much.
I thank you. Really.
Marie-Stéphane Bernard there from Radioland, from Studio C, which is kind of cool because, you know, we get to move around in this new format. I'm kind of digging it. I'm not just tied to what Studio A and a bunch of digital recordings. My thanks to Donna Essery for making this thing happen with Marie. Go to her website. You'll find the link in the description of this show. Go over there, take a look at what she's got. You can see all the stuff that she has going, and she's got a bunch of video links too. So if you want to see her in action, you can certainly do that. And expand your horizons. Check out the opera. It's not such a bad thing at all. All right, kids, you've heard what's coming up next time. As I mentioned before, I got to go. We'll see you then. Until then, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, and for God's sake, stop shooting each other, all right? I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.